So I thank the Minister and MOS for their heartfelt and comprehensive replies. I welcome in particular the groundbreaking step that all child losses in future will be independently reviewed. Yet, we must also do so in a way that sensitively protects the officers directly involved in each child loss case because they bear the emotional brunt of these cases. And so I think the only way we can do so is if we have first, in the child protection ecosystem, a culture of collective ownership. And this must go beyond taking collective responsibility when things go bad. It must mean a culture of ever more equal partnership when things are not bad, so that when things do go bad, we have the capacity to first band together, grieve together, cope together, and support each other first. So beyond system enhancements, my question is, how does the ministry plan to build up and strengthen this culture of collective ownership in our child protective ecosystem? So my second SQ is on Megan's case and the independent review into Megan's case. Now, the decision was taken after MSF's first statement on the case on 8 April 2025. So may I seek the Minister's clarifications on the timeline and how the decision to independently review Megan's case was made only after 8 April 2025. Thank you.
Minister Lee.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the member for his important questions, but before I proceed, may I just make a correction to what I said earlier. I mentioned in my response that for CPS, now known as Protective Service, we have doubled our child protection officers from 45 in 2019 to more than 90 in 2040, and we're continuing to expand. I meant to say 2024, not 2040. Now, with that correction behind us, sir, I will address the member's two questions. I thank him for his sensitivity to the work that is being done by our frontline officers, both in MSF as well as in the socials sector. This is prevention work. The sector is working together and working with the community and the public to prevent harm from occurring. It is a challenging and difficult and onerous responsibility which the sector bears and must bear for the protection of children and vulnerable persons, whether spouses, persons with disability, the elderly, and so on. And when a tragic outcome happens, whether hurt, serious hurt, or a death, everyone who has or might have had an opportunity or a touch point feels this not just organizationally and sectorally, but individually. And it's a question of what ifs. And as I said, it's prevention work, and our officers, both frontline as well as in the community, engage a lot of people all the time. So that for us, in handling cases like these, it's a balance between, on the one hand, transparency and accountability, which is important to maintain public trust and confidence, and confidence by parents that children will be taken care of and by the community. And on the other hand, making sure that the morale, the determination, and the will of our frontliners and our social workers is not broken. Because if they are demoralized, if they feel that this work is too much to bear, then it will be even harder for us to maintain this sentinel system to protect the most vulnerable amongst us. So the member is quite right in that when things go wrong, and in this case, things went wrong, we bear it as a sector, we bear it as agencies responsible, having interacted with or having had opportunity to interact with the cases. Certainly when officers have breached protocols, as you've heard MOS go, and as mentioned earlier, internal reviews and action have to be taken. But the burden is on the whole sector, as well as on the organisations concerned. So we strike a balance between both very paramount considerations. And we must keep building that. When I gave my response earlier, you would see graphically in your mind that child protection work involve rings of concentric circles. And they all have to work collectively together. The wider circle being members of the public, neighbours, colleagues, strangers, lending a helping hand, or reporting abuse. So that the inner rings, community organisations like schools, preschools, GPs, clinics, community organisations can take a closer look and also report. For an even inner ring of child protection case management agencies, including the Protective Service, to be able to intervene, offer help, protect the child through safety plans, and in the most high-risk cases, intervene statutorily with the police, with the courts if necessary. For all that to work, we need to continue to build up this culture of collective ownership, of relationships between organisations in this safety net. As I said in my reply at the end, we certainly have protocols and SOPs and common language and screening guides. All these are important so that things don't get missed, so that people can have the benefit of experienced people who have come up with these protocols for us to follow, so that our system can get better. But that is no substitute for the importance of a strong interagency collaborative relationship between one another. All wanting to work together, all knowing each other, and all imbibing that common vision and mission of taking care of the most vulnerable. So I agree with the member that this work is underway, and it's a continuous work in progress as new officers join the system. The member asked why there was a review in 2025. I think Minister Masagos, as well as MSF, had explained previously that in 2020, internal reviews had been carried out by the organisations concerned, as well as bilaterals with MSF. But in 2025, both during and after the sentencing of the perpetrators involved in Megan's death, new information had surfaced, for example, photographs, as well as new information from some of the agencies concerned, and MSF decided, notwithstanding the bilaterals done earlier, to convene an independent panel in order to strengthen the safeguards in our system and to look into the new facts that had surfaced.
I know many members have many questions. I'll run through the list of all those who have filed questions, so just be patient. Mr. Tsai Ing-to.
Thank you, Speaker. I thank the ministers for their reply. I'd like to seek a few clarifications. The first is on the case of Megan's case. The initial reporting of the case in media kind of pinned the blame on the social service agency Beyond that was involved. And a few community and social practitioners actually spoke up on social media about the optics of the reporting. And I think retrospectively, the question is then, how can we better report and comms when such how can we better report or comms when such tragedies happen in light of also encouraging collective ownership and culture? My second question refers to conversations with preschool educators. And on one hand, one anecdote was as much as educators want to balance building rapport with parents, and they do ask when they find injuries on the children, and they need to ask in a polite and non-offensive way to just clarify how injuries that might have occurred when they bring their child to the centre. So the question is, how does ministry help support preschools in kind of balancing this rapport with parents that preschool educators have to constantly balance? Another question by preschool educators was when a child with non-verbal or with special needs might present with injuries that parents may attribute to falls, and it is only the parents' account that is taken into consideration. What advice would you give to preschools to assess in those cases how much of parents' accounts to believe and whether or not to make a report with NAVH nevertheless? Last question on the preschool from preschool educators is, after the abused child returns to the centre, they may also exhibit some of this abusive or violent or inappropriate behaviour to their peers as well. How can teachers be better prepared for these scenarios? My last SQ references an initiative by MSF and KOFU that was launched in August this year, where 77 food court managers were trained by MSF to also highlight and to be the eyes and ears of the community and highlight NAVH hotline and the work that they do. So my question is, how do we expand such initiatives and, like Min mentioned, the rings of concentric circles where it's society's collective responsibility to protect the vulnerable? Thank you.
Minister Lee.
I thank the member for his observations and his questions. The balance, as I said earlier, is between setting out the facts as to what happened and, on the other hand, keeping the sector cohesive as a whole. And the aim is to reflect on what happened and see how those gaps should be closed. And so there was not and should not be an intention to point fingers. At the same time, the public expect some accountability and laying out of the facts. That is what happened in the report of the independent panel. And we've read the report and seen what happened. And so, to the extent that there was a misunderstanding, that there was finger-pointing, we have apologized to the relevant agencies, including Beyond Social Services, for the misunderstanding that had occurred. It was not the intention, but if that was perceived, we have apologized as well. For preschools, because they deal with very young children, from infants to the age of six, sometimes it is very hard to discern what is actually happening. And that is why we need two things. On the one hand, with experience, we produce protocols, guides to empower our frontliners, including preschool leaders and preschool teachers and carers, to be able to identify concerns and possible child abuse. So as I said earlier, if they detect something of concern, they can report. It will be for the social workers to offer more targeted support and for the protection agencies to intervene and make safe for the child. Having said that, I understand that there is a relationship between the preschool and the preschool teachers and the parents and children. They come to school every day or almost every day, and you want to maintain that relationship. So with the sector-specific screening guides, which we endeavour to train and have been training many frontliners, including in the preschools, it gives them some guide to look at in order to assess whether this is a case of concern. No doubt, concerned teachers and school leaders will ask questions, will show concern, and that is the right thing to do. But when enough of the dots are connected, And you see that in the SSSG, sector-specific screening guide. Then the guidance to our agencies and preschools is report, have this looked at more closely. The third question that the member has is initiatives like the one he mentioned. We welcome more hands on deck. We welcome community organizations, even corporates, who want to play a part in strengthening public education, strengthening awareness, and helping in this collective effort to look out for the vulnerable amongst us, whether it's children, persons with disability, seniors, and so on. And we would like to encourage them, step forward if you want to play a part, and we'll work with you.
Notwithstanding that we've extended the question time today, I request all members and also ministers to keep your replies succinct. Mr. Zulkarnain Abdulrahim.
Thank you, Speaker, sir. I welcome Minister's announcement of the new Social Service Coordination Centre by MSF and the usage of analytic tools to help with the detection and reporting. I do believe that any risk factor shouldn't, while it can be a predisposition, it could not be a predetermination of outcome. So I have two SQs, sir. But let me set out the context first. I asked about reforms which include independent oversight bodies because when there's clear independence and separation between report monitoring and service delivery, there could be uplifting of standards and quality and trust. So my first question actually arises from other jurisdictions. In New Zealand, there's a children's monitor, independent children's monitor that looks into compliance and of child protection laws, and it is an independent crown entity that reports to the public. In the UK, there's also the Office for Standards in Education, Children's Services and Skills, or Ofsted. It is a non-ministerial department of the government of UK, but it reports directly to the parliament. And so my first ask is this, Minister, will the In next year's review, and would the ministry also study similar jurisdictions and approaches to further strengthen accountability and coordination in our child protection system? Of course, there are some differences. Ofsted not just look into early childhood education, but the whole gamut of the child growing up years as well. The second SQ, Minister, sir. Minister mentioned about audit agencies and broadening of the audit scope just now, and that MSF will announce the enhanced measures come next year, 2026. Will the ministry set up clear timelines, audit and review mechanism, and public reporting expectations for these enhancements so that agencies are held to consistent standards across and families can have this confidence and trust, especially in suspected child abuse cases, so that they are not missed or delayed in reporting? Thank you.
Minister Lee.
So on the first question, as I said earlier, the follow-up on the panel's recommendations, we accept all the recommendations, but in terms of follow-up, we will work closely with the sector, consult them, and implement them by the end of next year. And whether it's a comparative study of overseas jurisdictions or engaging our sector to better strengthen our system, which we have been doing and will continue to do, all that will be taken on board. And I thank the member for his suggestions. Likewise, for audit, I talked about practice audits. I talked about various ways in which we ensure some consistency across the whole sector, because there are many organizations and many individuals involved in protection work. As I said earlier, there are screening guides, there are reporting guides, there are protocols in place. All these are important ways, on top of practice audits, to maintain and uphold standards. And I take the member's suggestions on board.
Mr. Melvin Young.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Minister for a very comprehensive reply. Following the review panel's findings, practitioners such as the social workers were very quick to point out that that there needed to be greater support for professionals in the child protection space, rather than simply having more standard operating procedures, guidelines, protocols, as what Minister has said. I fully agree with this. So I'd like to ask, what are the plans to upskill practitioners in child protection, and how can we elevate the persistent workload concerns in the sector? My second question is, how does the Ministry intend to address the review panel's findings that there appeared to be some fear of reporting to the authorities? We must surely do all we can to encourage cases to be reported and to inculcate a no-fault culture, even if suspicions of child abuse later turn out to be inaccurate. My last question, the review panel flagged inter-agency coordination failures as one of its findings. There seems to be no clear system for sharing updates among CPS, ACDA, BSS, the preschool, and even the police. And because of that, agencies appear to have treated concerns as somebody else's responsibility, and therefore resulting in some form of inertia. And therefore, the panel recommended establishing a centralized case management platform for high-risk child cases. Minister have mentioned that MSF is working on this. So I'd like to ask, when would this platform be established? And in the meantime, in the absence of such a platform, what is being done to ensure coordination among all these agencies?
Minister Lee.
I had mentioned in my reply that the system is can work only if our frontliners have the skills, the judgment, the experience, and the morale to keep this sentinel safety net strong. And therefore, that is a priority, and therefore, capability building and strengthening resourcing was point number one in my response. I won't repeat what I said earlier, bearing in mind the speaker's admonition about long replies. Fear of reporting, I'd also address that in my reply. In the Break the Silence campaign, we aim to encourage members of the public. If you hear something, see something that's not right, if you hear children screaming, hear shouting, beating, if you know your neighbour, ask if they need help, if they need some support, and if you're concerned, report. That's NAVH, and we will act. For frontline agencies like preschool, schools, there is outreach, there's engagement for preschools every year. For leaders, protective service will go out and do a refresher. There are protocols in place. There are timelines for reporting. All these are in place, but ultimately it's about their sense of collective responsibility and mission, which I also mentioned earlier. Sharing of updates, the panel had a very good recommendation, is to make sure that when things go wrong, you don't just do a bilateral with the organisation, you don't just do an internal review, share it more widely with the sector so that we all can strengthen our processes and benefit. And we will endeavour to do so.
Mr. Victor Lai.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sir, I'd like to thank the Minister's MOS for their replies. I just have two SQs, one on a recommended response, and then the second on reporting. On response, can we consider in the review requiring a protocol where physical verification of a child who is subject of a report, either missing or suspected child abuse, is actually closed within a certain timeline before the case is closed or escalated to the next level? The second SQ relates to reporting. Can we consider a mandatory child safety reporting framework so as to go beyond guidelines and to refine it with a tier one where it imposes a legal obligation on professionals and frontliners, say teachers, doctors, childcare operators, to report any such cases? It's a high bar, but it helps us close the gap. And on the second tier, we could cover community leaders, volunteers, neighbours even, and protect them with a good faith protection clause so as to remove any fear of reporting or repercussions. These two aspects on response and reporting could help us close the gap on this very important issue. Thank you.
Minister Lee.
The member asked about the need for physical sighting of the child. If there are concerns, the answer is yes. That is the current requirement. To see the child physically, not just to hear the child's voice or be assured by some third party, including a caregiver, or a Zoom kind of verification, is physical in-person sighting for children of concern, children at risk. For legal reporting, I think I've answered that earlier in my response. There are legal thresholds that mandate reporting, both for certain institutions as well as for public. But having said that, we're talking about raising concerns even at lower thresholds. You know, when a child comes to school or to childcare center or goes to a community organization with bruises, as a very young child, and the first thing you ask is, caregiver and parents, what happened? And, you know, quite often the response is fell down, you know, child discipline. And for most people, well, okay, we take the parents' word for it. And then over time, if there are certain dots that, you know, you connect them, then you realize that actually this is a bit more concerning. Does the parent need help? Is there caregiver stress? Is there some trigger that might be more sinister than discipline or an accident? And it's got to do with judgment. Yes, we have protocols in place, and these, I won't say tick boxes because, you know, it does give a wrong impression, but they indeed are based on past cases and experience, and they guide frontliners in deciding what to ask, when to ask, when to raise concerns, and who to raise concerns to. So we are talking about not just that, you mentioned high bar of reporting, but to be able to raise concerns with the family, with social workers, and with NAVH, so that we can act. And we want to make sure that all of these are in place and people understand that they can do so and seek help and report so that we can take a look.
Ms. Diana Pang.
Dear ministers, it pains me as a mom to hear what has happened, and it continues to pain me every day. I hope this will be first and the last time I hear this, and this will ever happen again. I would like to know the following. What are the criteria for selecting those who receive this specialized training to better support these cases? And what is considered as alternative care arrangement under this new framework, given that these families may have family issues, they cannot find alternative care. What with so many agencies and parties involved, what are too many ingredients actually spoil the soup? So who is ultimately in charge of this and what they can do when this happens again? Thank you.
Minister?
I think the member is right in that when there is an abuse case or suspected abuse case, often one of the contributing reasons could be caregiver burdens and stress, though there could be other triggers, and I don't want to oversimplify things. And therefore, when they need help, we need to make sure that there is help available, both informal in the community, within the family, as well as in the community, through social service organizations, community organizations, and so on. But when a case is a high risk, a tier two, or for that matter, a tier one case, where the child protection management agencies come in, there are a number of organizations involved, and ultimately there is a case lead for each of these cases, tier two, tier one, so that there is consistency, so that there's the centralized decision making, but in partnership with the other organizations and community groups. Particularly when A, a safety plan has to be established, and B, removal must take place, one or the other. And when a safety plan is brought in, next of kin maybe ask to be involved, to keep an eye, cite the child. Child stay over with the next of kin rather than with the parent who may be dealing with issues or maybe a person of concern to the authorities. So a safety plan. There could be more intrusive measures that we need to be taken to safe keep the child, including removing the child from parent or parents and putting them either with next of kin, with foster families, or in children's homes while the issues are being addressed and being worked through. So that is how it's carried out on the ground, and a lot of judgment and empathy is involved. Having said that, the centrality of child safety is foundational.
Ms. Valerie Lee.
Thank you, Speaker, and thank you, Minister. I've always been very inspired by how our municipal services office have been improving our neighbourhoods, and I'm heartened to know that a similar concept, a social services coordination centre, would help to improve the lives of our people. I have one ask you. Has the government any programs in place aimed at preventing child abuse in the first place going upstream, with a particular focus on providing support and resources to parents who might face challenges coping with their child's behaviour? And this can include targeted counselling services or producing resource guides issued to parents and tailored to the age of their children. Thank you.
Minister.
As I said, the foundational principle is that parents are responsible for children, and by far and away, parents do their best for the children. But when they face stressors or when they are grappling with issues, we need to provide help. So upstream work, preventive work is key, not just early risk families, but also parents at large. We have a whole range of programs, both in institutions, like in schools and preschools, in programs like Kid Start and others, Triple P and many others that seek to empower or provide useful information to parents in their caregiving of their children. So that is available, and we'll continue to work with partners to strengthen this.
Mr. Jackson Lam.
I thank Min for his replies. I understand that MSF has plans to train up the frontline officers, but before we get there, will MSF consider getting an independent auditor to review the records, the hotline records, so that the case registration failures are not only flagged out internally, but also externally verified?
Minister.
All calls to the NAVH are automatically recorded, logged, and transcribed. So that is the first safeguard. And as I said earlier, in my main response, it's not just within the Child Protection Management Agencies who are looking at the cases. They are progressively and expeditiously reaching out to community organisations and social service agencies that are not within the core Child Protection Management Agency group to ask them to surface cases and then have another look.
Ms. Haniso?
Thank you, Speaker. I wish to first declare that I'm a family law practitioner. I thank the Minister for his substantive reply, but I note that my PQ number 16, the questions have not been addressed yet, specifically in relation to when was the deceased father first being informed of the situation, and whether the ministry will consider requiring the parents of an affected child to be informed by relevant agencies and be involve both parents in any safety plan regardless of their marital status. The reason why I ask this is more often than not in the situations of a potential child abuse case, the relevant stakeholders more often than not tend to assume that the parent without the custody care and control should not be first informed, or any of the relevant informations may not be revealed to him at the earliest instance. And there are situations where there are cases where, in the event of a parental alienation, child abuse cases, the parent that was affected by parental alienation will only get known of the situations at the, being the last person in the situation.
Minister?
I can assure the member that when a case involving a child enters the Child Protection Management Agency's ambit of work, they will put in their best efforts to engage both the child's biological parents for safety planning where feasible, and I mentioned it earlier in response to Member Diana Pang's question. You may need one or the other parent to step in to part of the safety plan, especially if the parent is required to observe safeguards put in place or is in a position to support the child's safety and well-being. For cases that are taken up by the Protective Service in MSF, it will contact and engage both parents and or all caregivers to ensure the child's safety and well-being regardless of their marital status.
Miss Cassandra Lee, did you raise your hand earlier? No, I'm giving priority to those who have filed questions. So, Mr. Andre Lo, I know you filed a question for tomorrow. You may ask your SQ.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the Minister and MOS. My first question is actually relating to the substance of my PQ, which is filed for tomorrow, which has not been addressed, which is I understand Minister has mentioned many prospective actions that will be taken in response to the review panel's recommendations. My question was more, has there been any retrospective review of ongoing or past cases, whether it be in 2020 or recently in response to the review panel's findings, to make sure that we haven't overlooked any other similar cases to avoid another tragedy? And I have two SQs. Firstly is, I understand that Child Protective Services and Adult Protective Services were merged into the Protective Services Department earlier this year. I think it was implicit in the Minister's response, but I would like to confirm if the officers continue to specialise in their respective specialties. And secondly, on supply of social work professionals, is there a whole of government approach to increase the supply of social work professionals, be it through incentives or making the profession something more attractive to individuals to consider? Thank you.
Minister?
Thank the member for his questions. I think the first question, it was in my main reply as well as in my SQ reply to Member Jackson Lam, in terms of look back and reaching out to organisations to surface cases that may be of concern. If he's asking about past child deaths, each time there's a child death, there is a review and actions taken to close the gaps, tighten the processes. The second question he asked is about specialisation in PSV. It is now a unified protective service, but there are officers who specialise in certain kinds of communities, whether it's children, seniors and so on. But it's a service as a whole, and there is a benefit in common protocols, even as we seek to specialise in certain areas. And the third is about strengthening the social work profession as a whole. For protective work, as I said earlier, there's a real risk of burnout, so lots of measures need to put in place, including care for the officers, time away from the front lines, mental health support, and constant training and refreshment so that we upskill and continue to be encouraged to continue this challenging work. SUSS, which recently launched its social work and social development faculty, has a specific concentration or specialization, so-called, in their undergraduate course on protection. So we want to work with SUSS and our IHLs to continue to train caring Singaporeans who want to come into this work of protecting vulnerable people. But as a whole, for the whole social sector, there continue to be need for more social work professionals, social workers, caseworkers, counsellors, and so on. And the work of the NCSS and the Ministry continues on this front to ensure that we have a steady pipeline.
Mr. Fu Zhexiang, I know you also file a PQ on this tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you, Speaker. Sir, I welcome the formation of the new Social Services Coordination Centre. But for each specific case on the ground, it is really the child protection officer that will need to coordinate across the different agencies. And a good one will be able to think of and think for the activities of many different stakeholders. So I remember Minister mentioning earlier that the number of cases per officer has been reduced from 40 to 35, if I recall correctly. My question is whether the ministry has a target to reduce this even further, quite substantively, to, for example, 25 or even 20. And the reason why I ask is because, number one, the actual caseload is an issue to manage the child, but because of the coordination work that is required, because of the mind space that the officer will need to have, I believe that the number of cases is still too high at 35. Thank you.
Minister.
So I said in my main reply that we had expanded the number of child protection officers as well as PSV, Protective Service Officers, increased the number. The workload is high, it has come down, and we'll continue to... We brought in auxiliary support services, not just increasing manpower, but brought in additional services to help transform and improve the way in which our Protective Service Officers work. And I've said earlier that we will continue to expand.
Okay, we've gone past question time by almost 20 minutes. I believe I've cleared all those members who have filed PQs on this. I will now just allow for two last SQs. Mr. Christopher D'Souza, you've been raising your hand from day one, so you have the floor.
I thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a difficult and emotional topic, and I want to thank Minister Desmond Lee and MOS Goh Pei Ming for your heartfelt responses. I felt the emotion in them. And I just wanted to ask my SQ as one of balance. In my own personal dealings with the SSO and MSF, they are excellently diligent and hardworking people. You've worked with me at 2 a.m. on cases, likewise home affairs officers visiting homes where there's abuse. So I'm genuinely concerned, and this is, I'm mounting my supplementary question, that we do not forget the excellent hard work of the many diligent officers. And yes, there have been a number of difficult gaps that have aligned, and Megan is no longer with us. But I hope we will not throw the baby out with the bathwater. And my question to the good minister and the good minister of state is, how are we going to take care of our diligent, exceptional, dedicated officers who are the vast majority in each of these institutions and have their morale kept high while in parallel we close the gaps that have led to this tragedy? I do not wish to underestimate the impact of Megan on all of us, but how do we walk this tightrope of encouraging and uplifting the morale of these excellent officers in both ministries while at the same time plugging the loopholes? Thank you.
Minister Lee.
Mr. Speaker, I'll respond briefly for the social sector, and MOS will respond for the police. And I thank him for his care and consideration for our frontline officers. It is difficult work. And the best way to support them is to affirm their work, know that while there were lapses and mistakes, we will continue to close the gap, learn from them, and resolve collectively as a sector to do better. And that collective responsibility that Member Seow Chen spoke about is important. Even as we retain trust of members of the public through transparency and accountability, other forms of support involve making sure that their well-being is taken care of, giving them respite, support, taking care of their mental well-being, training them well and effectively, putting in place SOPs and protocols both within the organization and externally, supervision and support and mentorship so that they continue to do their work well.
Muesco.
I thank the member for his compliments and acknowledging that the work that the police force does is a very difficult one. The load is heavy, the responsibility is heavy, and at the same time, every police officer signs on knowing that is a mission that he has to do for his fellow citizens and deliver that duty to the people who respects the uniform and respects the police force for what they do. So I thank the member very much for the compliments, for the professionalism and the commitment of all our police officers out there. I know every police officer will strive to do his best. Every case is important, and they've sworn to protect lives and to keep the nation, Singapore and Singaporeans, safe and secure. At the same time, I think what the organisation and what I guess members of parliament can also help to do is to acknowledge the hard work that they do. All members of parliament also have close relationship with police officers in your own constituencies. And I think that relationship, the close communication, understanding what are the challenges, the progress of work, and perhaps supporting if there's a need for them at the ground is important. From the ministry, we will continue to support and make sure that feedback loops are closed. We will make sure that we hear and listen to the police officers. From time to time, we do surveys. We do, and through the appraisal reports, for example, we do get feedback in how we can best support our officers. Two areas of immediate follow-up. One is in terms of the overall technology adoption. I mentioned earlier, we are always, especially as a professional force, eagerly looking into how we can better adopt technology to enhance our processes, our procedures, improve efficiency, and in fact, even shorten what we can do to close every single case and to get back to every single resident. I think that's the first. The second is, of course, overall manpower allocation. We're also looking into how we can best allocate and optimize manpower assignments in terms of what are the areas of priority, areas of emphasis, and to make the corresponding allocations or to grow the force where we need to. Thank you.
Ms. Alyssa Chen, I apologize. I know you also filed a PQ for a subsequent sitting. You will be the final member to ask SQ on this.
Thank you, Speaker. I'd also like to declare that I'm the Executive Director of Campus Impact. It's a social service agency that works with children, some of whom are child protection cases. I acknowledge also and I thank the Minister for sharing about the heavy emotional burden borne by child protection officers and welcome the news of a new social services coordination centre supported by technology to detect, sense, make and connect the dots for cases from different touch points. I'd like to also highlight that it requires a strong culture and process to ensure that data is recorded and input into the system. The issue in Megan's case was about the follow-up action, so the tech system has to do more than SenseMate, but also ensure that follow-up action is clearly flagged to be done with the clear task owners and requiring supervisor clearance in line with the protocols that have been set up. I have three questions. How will the government measure the success and effectiveness of this new coordination centre in improving child protection outcomes? Are there specific indicators such as faster case detection, earlier intervention, or reduced recurrence of child harm that will be tracked? And how will MSF ensure that frontline social workers and community partners benefit directly from the improved coordination rather than being burdened by additional administrative layers? Thank you.
Minister Lee.
The Social Service Coordination Centre and the use of technology, these should augment the work of the Child Protection Network. But in and of itself will not be a silver bullet. We hope that with some technology, with coordination, we can better focus on at-risk cases. Because the workload is high, we encourage people to report, and officers will be under strain to deal with many more cases that are surfaced, some of which would be false positives. And that is the way it is designed, so that we take a look and dive a bit deeper. But being able to connect some of these dots across multiple agencies and organizations will enable the system as a whole to be able to sense make better. Sometimes, in its discrete self, a piece of information may not cause a flag to go up. But when you are able to better connect the dots, you might feel that, well, this is one which crosses the threshold, better go in and take a look. So how to measure the success of these tools? I would say let's look at the overall cohesiveness of the sector, the ability to coordinate the work more effectively, the ability to identify earlier high-risk cases and to intervene. It's early days yet. As we consult with the sector, as we engage with them, as we work with them, we will better be able to unpack what capabilities we specifically seek to achieve.
MOSCO.
Speaker, I earlier in my initial PQ reply mentioned that the police had made several enhancements, one of which was the introduction of the family violence training package for all frontline and investigation officers. I may have misspoke, citing that the year this was introduced was 2020. I wish to correct myself. It should be 2022. Thank you.